I'm Dan Carell, CEO of the Digital Commerce Alliance, and this is Commerce Code, a bi-weekly digital commerce podcast for leaders in card linking, loyalty, and digital marketing, mobile wallets and payments, and financial data. Thanks for joining this running conversation with leaders in the industry. And if you like this podcast, come join us at a Digital Commerce Alliance event. You can learn more at www.digcomall.org. This week, I'm talking with Avery Miller from RBC and Sean Conahan from Wildfire Systems about the evolution of FI loyalty and rewards programs. Avery is head of digital consumer product at RBC's Avion Rewards platform. RBC is one of the world's leading FIs, headquartered in Toronto. They serve 17 million clients in Canada, the US, and 27 other countries. Sean is the chief revenue officer at Wildfire Systems, which provides white label shopping rewards and cashback platforms to leading companies like Microsoft, Visa, Citi, and of course, RBC. So today, Avery, Sean, and I are talking about the challenges that financial institution loyalty programs face, how consumers experience FI loyalty programs, and how those preferences are driving changes. RBC's response to those challenges and some of the changing preferences among consumers. And then finally, what's next for the sector as that evolution continues? So stay tuned for a deep dive into the evolution of FI loyalty, a conversation with Avery Miller of RBC and Sean Conahan of Wildfire Systems. This episode of Commerce Code is brought to you by Augeo, a global leader in engagement platform technologies that create compelling experiences, foster people connections, and cultivate brand advocates worldwide. With more than 45 years of experience, Augeo empowers Fortune 500 companies to deliver extraordinary brand experiences for employees, consumers, channel partners, subscribers, and members. Fueled by a holistic engagement ecosystem across workplace engagement, experiential, social activation, customer loyalty, and digital asset experiences, Augeo's mission is inspiring people to achieve more, one interaction, transaction, and experience at a time. Augeo, engagement unleashed. Avery and Sean, thank you so much for joining us on Commerce Code. Where are you each joining us from?
This is Avery, and I'm joining you from Richmond, Virginia.
And this is Sean. The company Wildfire is virtual only, so we're spread out around the country. But I geographically sit in sunny San Diego. My apologies to everyone else around the country.
Yeah, apologies directed primarily to me, Sean. As some regular listeners of Commerce Code will know, I occasionally mention I live in St. Paul, Minnesota. And we did, after winter had decided just not to happen this year, we did decide, you know, it changed its mind. So we've got our customary layer of snow, but it's sunny and cold. So there you go. Well, look, I've been looking forward to this conversation, and we've been sort of chatting and talking in advance leading up to this podcast about it. I think it's just an important, kind of fascinating issue. And so, Sean, I want to start with you because, you know, Wildfire really sort of sits in the middle of things and sees a lot of the way that the market for loyalty and rewards programs has been evolving, the way it develops. And, you know, I know that you have worked with BCG to develop some research to just better understand some of the challenges that players in the market are facing. So I'll start with, you know, what problems in particular are financial institutions needing to solve right now when it comes to their loyalty programs?
Right. So let me give you just a little background on that white paper that you mentioned. In October of 2023, so not that long ago, the Boston Consulting Group issued a white paper called Loyalty 2.0, Making Loyalty Pay. And it was co-authored by several senior partners at BCG, plus myself and some colleagues at Wildfire. So the setup here is we know that it is 10 times more expensive to acquire a new customer than to keep an existing one. So many financial institutions are rightly focused on creating loyal customers. The synopsis of the BCG white paper is that loyalty programs can and should be a profit center and not a cost center, hence the Making Loyalty Pay title. The paper then explains how to get there, comparing and contrasting traditional loyalty programs, the 1.0 version of loyalty, if you will, with the newer 2.0 approaches. The difference being that the former tend to focus on optimizing within the existing banking experience, whereas the latter approaches largely expand the bank's footprint outside of their four walls to engage customers more outside of the banking experience. And since Wildfire is a leading platform powering loyalty programs for many of the largest FIs, notably RBC, and most recently Citi, BCG asked us to contribute our knowledge and expertise. So to answer your question directly now, the problems financial institutions are needing to solve right now are, I would say, many and varied. First is the issue of competition. Most legacy banking institutions are reporting losing share to nimbler upstart fintechs who are flush with what used to be nearly free VC money, you know, unencumbered by strict regulatory pressures and the quarterly treadmill of public company reporting, et cetera, et cetera. They've instead invested very heavily in customer acquisition strategies. And of course, their close cousin, customer retention. In a word, loyalty. Next, I would say, is the environment we are in. The regulatory environment isn't exactly bank-friendly at the moment. It's putting downward pressure on earnings and margins, leading to real and significant shortfalls, both revenue and margin-wise, and the FIs are looking for revenue replacements. So the good news is that a loyalty program that is also a profit center is a win-win. You know, as an example, perhaps a CFPB cap on late fees may result in $1 billion shortfall for your bank. So why not replace it with a benefit to consumers that saves them money when they shop, while at the same time creating a net new revenue stream for your bank, right? Completely fundamental merchant. So anyway, in the white paper are a few case studies of banks getting loyalty 2.0 right. And the best example in the market right now of a company doing everything right is the Royal Bank of Canada and their Avion Rewards program, which is truly a great blueprint for how to excel in this area.
Sean, that's such an interesting take on not just the market pressures, but regulatory pressures as well. Avery, from the RBC side, what's your angle on that first comment and the kind of discussion that Sean started?
I do think Sean is pretty spot on there. I think we, as a collective population and culture, have forgotten a lot of the early days of payments. And we reflect on Durbin and Durbin 2.0 and what might happen to interchange and how we fund all the rewards in the system today. And we forget that things like Diners Club used to be 6 and 7% interchange equivalents. And that's because those things brought something accretive to those merchants, right? And merchants are willing to pay for accretive value. And I think what we're seeing is that where interchange and access to cards and credit have become more of a ubiquitous feature, especially in the United States compared to some other geographies, North America certainly, what we see is that there are other ways to grow basket sizes, to access new customers or new markets, or tap into a slightly higher conversion rate. And it's the loyalty business, right? It's exactly what Sean is talking about.
All of this depends on the value being there for consumers. And I wonder, Avery, if you think that the kind of consumer perspective on loyalty and rewards programs, like what they get out of it, has changed? Is it different? And if so, how than it has been in the past?
I do think that is the case. Not for nothing. The broad economy is probably okay right now, relatively speaking. But that doesn't change the fact that there are inflationary forces. And I think when you stare at consumers' responses and reactions to loyalty programs, the fact that in the white paper, it called out that Americans are on average members of about 17 programs each, it speaks to the idea of a deflationary force. And I think, generally speaking, people are interested in getting better value for their money. That's certainly what the research tells us. Even the wealthiest and most affluent customers will brag about great deals they get. And that's because it's kind of built into, I think, the human DNA and certainly the American DNA. And that's what I think people look to today, more so than anything, is that kind of everyday value. That's maybe a little bit different than how banks have historically thought about rewards, because we thought about them largely as a reward for being a high lifetime value customer, right? And that tends to drive to the affluent side or the aspirational side, you know, those 2% cash back cards, you know, the Chase Sapphires, the Capital One Ventures and Venture X's of the world, right? Not everybody has access to that kind of value. So how do we get value for everybody? How do we get value for Main Street? That's where I think rewards and loyalty programs are really oriented today, because that's what consumers want to see.
It seems to me, you know, this is just all examples of what markets do when information, you know, becomes more fluid in the marketplace and people are playing more tightly to try and get the value that they can. And that includes not just consumers, as you've just talked about, Avery, but, you know, merchants, right? And I think the story in this space also includes, you know, kind of some, I hear a lot at DCA about pressure on merchants and more competition in that space and other merchants kind of getting value out of things. So I wonder if you think the merchant perspective has changed as well.
I definitely think it has. I alluded to a little bit of it with some of the Diners Club comments and the 6 and 7% exchange rate earlier, where, you know, they were willing to pay 6 and 7% because they were paying for accretive sales. Those are incremental sales, incremental basket sizes, and the payback on that money, the return on spend, the return on investment was worth it. I think what we're seeing today that is true about the digital world especially is the big get bigger, and there's gravity when there is a density of eyeballs. And so as a merchant of nearly any size, you are almost required to go be on somebody else's platform. It's really hard to be direct to a consumer today, to be direct in building a relationship, because everybody wants to go where they can find all their options, right? They want to go to Amazon to start their journeys. And when you're on Amazon, you're transacting with Amazon. Yeah, I'm buying Nike, but that's not who I'm interacting with. I'm not a customer of Nike at that point. And I think what merchants want really are the same things they've always wanted. They want increased conversion. They want higher lifetime customer value, access to new customers and markets. They want help managing their operational and risk complexity. And they'll pay for those things. And what loyalty and rewards programs are is exactly what Sean was saying in the beginning, right? It's customer retention. It's bringing back that customer one, two, or three more times more often than they normally would because they're getting value for it. And that helps feed that direct-to-consumer model, which is something that's really hard to do when everybody's using these large aggregators as ways to find the things they want to buy.
When I reflect on my own behavior, I'm probably as weird as most people have become in a lot of ways, right, over the decades. So I'm 51. And even just the idea of like attaching to a particular retailer, I still do, but it's not as fundamental to the way I think about commerce as it was 20 years ago, 30 years ago. You know, it's just that the whole environment and your point about where the journey starts and then how we can inflect that. And I'll say even, you know, from the consumer perspective, there's some stuff that's more convenient. There's a lot of stuff that's kind of missing, right? It's not as rich as the relationships aren't there. That's not as rich as it used to be. So Sean, you've worked with RBC to develop a unique cashback component of the Avion loyalty program. Why don't you tell us what it is and then some of the key elements?
A few things. We do power an important component, which is the Shop Plus shopping extension that rewards consumers with cashback when they shop online. So this differentiates RBC from their would-be competitors, and it's an important cornerstone of the program, perhaps one of the most important aspects of the program, because it's the part that engages the customer outside of their banking experience. With a browser extension on desktop or mobile that pops up with the RBC brand, reminding them that they're saving money today, this merchant, because they're a loyal RBC customer. And I think that extending the value of the RBC brand outside the four walls that they own is a very important aspect of what BCG would describe as loyalty 2.0, meeting your customer where they are.
You described it before, I think, and well, I'll use maybe different words, but you know, financial institutions striking out into play offense or find new terrain or find new market space. And, you know, obviously this is an example of that. I think of financial institutions, the more established they are, ones that, for example, might have the word royal in their name, like that they're pretty careful. Is it hard to get those institutions to say, hey, let's go strike out and do something new?
It hasn't been my experience, frankly. RBC, as a good example, is one of the most innovative companies we've worked with. And we're a, you know, small 70-person startup, but they're quite forward-thinking in how they deploy technology to engage their base. I do understand what you're saying, though, that our entire industry moves at a fairly glacial pace. I mean, this is the most regulated industry on the planet, I dare say. And you definitely want to come to market carefully with a product that is going to respect your regulatory overhead InfoSec compliance, UDAP compliance, you know, all of those boxes need to be checked. But that doesn't mean that there's a lack of innovation there. It may simply take a little bit of time to move through the normal machinations of a large organization. But my observation is that it absolutely doesn't mean these aren't innovative companies.
So, of course, as everybody knows, the story of the Canadian banking sector over the last 20 years anyway was having the intelligence not to do a very dumb thing leading up to the financial crisis. But then I think the postscript has been, at least in my experience, a willingness to your point, to innovate and to dive into some interesting stuff. And we certainly at DCA have plenty of Canadian members that are pretty good examples of that. So it's an interesting balance, or at least a storyline. You know, Avery, so you're sitting there leading this at RBC. I'm curious what you're kind of most excited about in terms of what you guys are doing now with this platform.
Sean was hitting on it for me. What Avion is really, upon rebrand about a year and a half ago, is an amalgamation of a bunch of different parts of what RBC was before, ways we were trying to create value for our clients. And the vision of it, to kind of bring it all together, was to bring that really aspirational travel-related card spend type rewards program and points, bring it together with offers that we kind of sourced ourselves in a proprietary way for card link style transactions, to also bring together our strategic partners for linking of loyalty like Rexall and Petro, and bring together this brand new feature functionality around shopping in the retail space. And that was because we wanted to do something that was everyday value on top of the aspirational value that we brought. And what I'm really excited about, and Sean said some very kind words there about us, but you know, when I look around at my leadership team, my peers within the loyalty space at RBC, we are staring at the opportunities that being in path presents to us longer term. Right now, it is a fantastic feature that we call Shop Plus that brings a lot of value to people where they don't have to come to us first. I have a bunch of customers who do that, thankfully, because I've got a 20-year-old proprietary program that does very well, but not everybody wants to do that. And being able to meet customers in path, meet them where they are, and still show them the value that surprises and delights and helps convert a transaction, that's really powerful stuff. And what we're staring at, what we're really excited about, is how else can we use that? How else can we bring something of value in path to the customer where they are, instead of making them come to our surface to get it first? And we're really excited about some of the potentials and the opportunities there. And that's why I love partners like Sean and Wildfire, is because, yeah, they're there. They're selling a solution. They're selling a product to solve a specific problem, but they're not afraid to dig into the opportunities that might present in other veins and other avenues.
Part of the challenge, I think, in these markets that move so fast is, you know, if you stop moving, you just don't know where consumers are going to be and where the market's going to be in a year or two. And so also, you know, having those options out there, those different ways of reaching consumers, could become incredibly important in the future. You just don't know, right? So you kind of need to stay agile and keep building new opportunities. Well, guys, we're going to jump to a commercial break. And when we come back, we're going to dive back in particular to, you know, retail rewards and why that and how does it benefit financial institutions. So we'll take a short break and we'll be right back.
Commerce Code is brought to you in part by VantageScore. 9 of the top 10 banks and over 3,000 leading banks and fintechs use VantageScore to predict and manage repayment risk. Learn more about the latest advances in credit scoring and how to grow your lending business by leveraging financial inclusion at VantageScore.com.
Okay, Sean, so as we come back in, you know, there's lots of different ways to do rewards, and why retail rewards? And do you see kind of other approaches that financial institutions often consider? What are some of the pros and cons?
First of all, consumers are asking for it. Wildfire issued a primary research white paper in June of 2023 entitled Shopping in the New Normal, which reported on consumer attitudes and behaviors around online commerce. And the best way I can summarize it is that when times are good, people do not mind saving money when they shop. But when times are tight, as they are now in this economy, they absolutely seek out those opportunities. In fact, 74% of consumers reported that they increased their use of money-saving approaches for online shopping last year. And maybe more importantly, is where they expect to get those rewards. 81% of respondents said they want cash back rewards from their bank or credit card. So we're giving banks and issuers what their customers want, a way to save money when they shop, which also happens to be a profit center. So you asked what other approaches FIs usually consider, and there are many that your audience will be well familiar with. Card-linked offers are good, but they tend to be high friction. They tend to have low conversion. Shopping portals are good, but when a consumer decides they want to buy, say, towels, they're more likely to go directly to Macy's. They don't think to go to their bank's website to see if there's a deal on towels. Other things like wallets and loyalty currencies like points and stars are other ways to engage customers. Now, I should say that all of these components are complementary to each other. There's not one that's better than another. So for instance, I'm not arguing that wildfire shopping rewards are a replacement for CLO, quite the opposite. My stance and the stance of the BCG white paper we're referencing is that to be truly effective, an FI needs to engage consumers on all of the surfaces they touch, pulling all of the puzzle pieces together to form a complete picture. And I think that's where the industry has evolved to today.
Do you have a kind of a prediction? And I like the multiple surface approach and touching people, you know, everywhere they are, or at least in all the key places. Do you have a prediction, Sean or Avery, on what do you think RBC's customers are going to like the most about this program, or maybe some early indications of as you make these changes, you know, where are people really engaging?
I think what customers like the most is that they can find value at brands that they love. Like, as I mentioned earlier, our program has had our own proprietary offers and linked loyalty programs for a very long time. Unless I wanted to staff a massive sales force, right? I'm kind of capped out at the couple of hundred of merchant partners to put content on my platform. What a solution, a product, a feature like Wildfire and Shop Plus offers us is a ton of density at really well-known brands, right? Lego and Walmart. And what that means is that our customers can take the transactions that they do on a daily, weekly basis, and they can find extra value, right? Extra change in the couch cushion. And we see it. We see it in the user base. We see it that upwards of 60%+ of our installed user base have seen offers. We see it that we get better than a 30% conversion rate when somebody activates an offer. Like, you don't get 30% conversion rates online for transactions. That just doesn't happen. And so there's power there. And we think it's because the customers see the value, and we think they'll keep coming back for that value.
What are the things that you don't know, right? So we've been talking so far about, you know, aspects of, I mean, the reason we're having this conversation, right, is things, it's working, right? And people need to know about it. But there's always stuff that you don't know. So what would you regard, Avery, as kind of the key uncertainties as you look for the next few years of this thing?
One of my biggest uncertainties, the things that I stare at as a product executive, is whether or not I can really change and alter customer behavior at scale. There's a famous quote that often gets attributed to Steve Jobs about something having to be 9 times better in order for somebody to go do it versus the thing they were doing before. And there's real psychology behind that. There's a lot of bias in the user that feeds that. There's bias in the executive. I think my ideas are better than they really are. And because of all those biases, things actually really have to be 9 times better in order for somebody to change a behavior. And so for me to habituate new patterns of behavior, for me to create new rituals for people, for me to convince people to install a browser extension, which is no simple task to do, in order to get a lot of this value and path, like, I have to go and believe certain things, and I have to get people across that canyon to make those changes. And that's one of the big uncertainties that I have, is how many customers can I change behaviors for? We feel confident that we can do a really good job of it, but the future will tell.
You know, when I think about behavior change, it's obviously a really important, it's sort of the job for anybody that does marketing. And I think about an example of electric cars. You know, you see electric cars on the road. I can ask myself the question of, well, I just got a new car last year. Why didn't I get an electric car? Why didn't I? I truly believe the correct answer is, I don't know. I can tell you stories about why I did or didn't. I've kind of rationalized it either way. There's a sort of a momentum, and you just kind of, your head evolves to it. Because at this point, a year later, I probably would get an electric, but I just wasn't mentally there yet. The point being that, you know, We do things in part because we see more examples of it. It gets normalized. Some people adopt things early, right? There's all the science of this and the social science of this. But, you know, we ultimately don't know, is it because it was easy? Is it because everybody else did it? Some things, you know, change happens fast, and others, you know, the change never quite comes the way we think. So that looms for everybody in digital commerce as to what's the thing that will next be widely and rapidly adopted, and how powerfully can we inflect that, right, from our perspective. Sean, as you think about the total marketplace, everyone's assessing their loyalty and rewards programs. I mean, this is a constant conversation that I'm having with companies. And so, and you mentioned earlier this idea of shifting from loyalty 1.0 to loyalty 2.0, and that was kind of the framing for this white paper from a few months ago. Is it hard to make that shift? I mean, that's one of the things about change, right? I can imagine if I want that it's hard to shift over to an electric car. I think it's probably not. But, you know, that's part of it, the belief that, well, this might be difficult. Or is it a branding problem? Is it logistical? Like, what are the barriers that people imagine or experience in getting to loyalty 2.0?
I would say mostly it's philosophical, because it certainly isn't technological. The tools and technologies that are available to FIs to present their customers with this depth of value and engagement are out there. They're well understood. They're configurable. They're customizable to fit any one of our partners' needs. So it's not technological, that's for sure. Is it true that our industry moves somewhat slowly and at a pace that is careful? Yeah, that's true. And that's actually a good thing, in my opinion. And so that brings me to the barrier really being mostly philosophical, not unlike you and your electric car. The best way I could put it is this. In February of 2020, the Harvard Business Review published a truly landmark article coining the phrase loyalty economy. And the summary is that most business leaders know they should maximize value of the customer base, but too often earnings pressures result in cost-cutting measures that hurt customers. And as cited by Harvard, companies at the top of their industry's net promoter scores or other, you know, satisfaction rankings grow revenues roughly 2.5 times as fast as peers, and they deliver 2 to 5 times the shareholder returns over the next 10 years. Yet here we are at the lowest unemployment rate in history, and our industry is in aggressive cost cutting, responding to regulatory and other pressures. But that's effectively prioritizing quarterly earnings over long-term customer relationships. I think this is financial suicide in an era where consumers are more enabled than ever before by abundant choice and nearly non-existent friction. So in summary, I'd say that banks like RBC, more recently Citi entering the market with a similar product and approach to consumer loyalty, these companies have made the philosophical decision that they're going to focus on customer loyalty. And this is from the top down. Once you decide that you're going to do this, that becomes the right decision to make. And then the numbers stand for themselves.
It's a great comment, I guess, on the nature of investment and investing in loyalty and in customers. It feels like, and for some people, we'll hear that as an invitation to invest, right? Fortune favors the bold. Let's go do it. If everybody else is going to sit on their hands because they're worried about this quarter, then that's kind of an opportunity for the organizations that have the courage or something to play offense and say, hey, let's do a great job, right? Let's get this done. For each of you, and maybe Avery first and then Sean, would love to just get your sense of where this goes. We now have a sense of kind of how the year has started. You know, we're still in the world of the weird economy, right? We talked about this a little bit, and folks' psychology about how well the economy is going isn't quite the same as how well the economy is going. I wonder where each of you feel like how this year is going to end. And in particular, if we're talking about, you know, these loyalty programs, how do you think new platforms like this, or maybe this Avion platform in particular, is going to impact holiday shopping, end of the year, and how we're going to be feeling, you know, a year from now? Avery, I wonder if you've got any thoughts on that, and maybe Sean, you can close us out.
Yeah, I've got a couple. I mean, as we come through the back half of this year, we will be just on the other side of 1 year of being open to all Canadians as Avion. So Avion has historically been an RBC program and an RBC client program. We opened our doors to everybody in Canada, all 40 million, well, at least age majority out of the 40 million to come join. And I suspect a few things will be true on the tail end of this year. I suspect that we will prove that the everyday value that is here within Avion, not in small part due to our friends at Wildfire and what they offer us as a platform, will drive a lot of people to come and seek out that value. I think that the ease with which it can be accessed will start to set a new benchmark for the expectations that people have for getting great deals and finding that deflationary force. I don't think they're going to be willing to jump through a lot of hoops to get it the way they have to in many places today, where you have to link this and transact three times and go buy a dog and then move to a different county. I think that the way we make it easy to get all the value in our system is going to mean that everybody come next holiday season is going to be looking for something just as easy. Like the promise of the digital age is that all of these jobs that users and customers have to do become easier and easier. We have an obligation and our job as product people and business leaders who offer things to our clients is to reduce that space between the call to action and the action itself and make it easier and easier. And that's what I think we're going to see throughout the course of this year. And is it, you know, are we going to see digital wallet levels of uptake of features like this by the end of this year? Maybe not, but I bet the acceleration into this is going to be a lot more hockey stick than digital wallets even were, because there's real money at the end of it, right? This isn't just an ease and a comfort thing. It's real money on the table. And that's what I think a lot of people are still hungering for, especially this year.
I totally appreciate that you got hockey stick in there. That's perfect. And and that you've joined the vanguard of organizations that are trying to normalize easy. We've had a lot of conversations about friction. Sean, you mentioned friction earlier in the podcast. A lot of conversations about friction. And Avery, you described very well, you know, the hoops that people have to jump through in order to get from, yeah, call to action to action. I love the way that you phrase that, because there's so much barrier that tends to get erected. And if you can normalize an expectation of things being easy, I think that's good for the market. That's terrific. So, Sean, what are your thoughts? You know, same thing, but you know, sitting here, you know, 10 to 12 months from now, how are we going to be feeling about where the market's gone this year?
Let me answer it this way. Our business model is largely revenue share, shared risk, shared reward. And with 7,400% three-year growth, we just landed at number 60 on the Inc. 5,000. That's not to brag. That is to illustrate that we wouldn't be doing that well if our partners weren't doing that well. So my outlook is that it's going to be a pretty big year for shopping reports. The other way I'd like to answer it is this. I think the industry-leading companies like RBC making bold moves in this environment to double down on robust customer loyalty programs are paving the way for the entire industry to renew our focus on the customer. So I think by the end of this year, this will no longer be a nice-to-have differentiator, but will be need-to-have table stakes as more and more FIs realize they can drive loyalty by richly rewarding their customers, all while making it a net new profit center.
Sean, first of all, I love the fact that you've built a business where the clients actually have to make money in order for you to make money. This is not, you may have noticed, in Silicon Valley, the typical approach. And so thanks for being contrarian in that way. That's pretty awesome. We look forward to seeing how this all plays out. And it is exciting. I've heard lately so much optimism and just kind of positivity from in conversations with DCA members about how their business is going, how things are kind of flowing right now. And so if that's any indication, I think both of you will be pretty happy by the end of the year, and consumers and merchants will too. So thank you so much for joining us on Commerce Code. Really been a great conversation. And we'll follow you going down the line as to how the rest of this year goes and into the future with Avion.
Thanks, Dan. My pleasure.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Commerce Code is sponsored by Pentadata, the all-in-one financial data API. Whether it is bank account data, credit card transaction data, or credit reports and credit scores, Pentadata has it all in one simple and easy-to-use API. With coverage of over 6,000 banks, over 200 million credit files, and 60 million merchants, you can get all the data you need for your apps at pentadatainc.com. Commerce Code is a bi-weekly podcast bringing you conversations with executives who are leading the way in digital commerce. If you like Commerce Code, your company should join the Digital Commerce Alliance and become part of our mission of advancing trade for good through standard setting, industry networking, conferences, and best practice sharing. Check out our website at www.digcomall.org. On behalf of DCA, have a great week.